This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
This is, to me, just another way that the gas industry is changing the subject. They don't want to admit that they're injecting harmful chemicals into the groundwater. They don't want to tell people what they are because it's scary.
Remember when the tobacco industry hired a PR firm to convince us all that smoking wasn't addictive and didn't cause cancer? Now we know better, but the next big lie is coming from the natural gas industry, who hired that same PR firm to convince us that fracking isn't bad for us or the earth. Today on Sea Change Radio, I talk with Josh Fox, director of the 2010 Oscar-nominated film Gasland, which showed audiences all over the world the devastating impact of hydraulic fracturing from cancer to flammable tap water. His latest project, The Sky is Pink, is a documentary short that uncovers the obfuscation campaign the natural gas industry has launched in response to Gasland and growing activism against this controversial drilling practice. On the eve of New York's decision to frack or not to frack, Fox's insights in this film couldn't be more timely. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by director Josh Fox. He is well known for his movie Gasland, and his latest movie about natural gas fracking is a short video called The Sky is Pink. Josh, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
When I was watching the basic thesis for The Sky is Pink unfolding, it made me think of this fact versus fantasy debate culture that's kind of sprung out in the media pretty much since the advent of Fox News. It could be related to a lot of things, but you relate it to fracking quite effectively. Why don't you give us a quick overview of the film?
Well, I guess the film Sky is Pink, it really is addressing the urgent situation in New York State right now. And I think that's a key moment because Governor Andrew Cuomo has signaled through his Department of Environmental Conservation that they are really contemplating opening up a large section of the state to drilling, a huge area, and that could very well pave the way to opening up the entire state to drilling. And this is a grave concern at the moment. But the film focuses on how the gas industry itself knows that it's contaminating water supplies, because they have memos, scientific studies, PowerPoints, a lot of information that's coming from within the industry itself, some of which has been published in, you know, Society of Petroleum Engineers journals and other journals, scientific papers, and others that were PowerPoints and things that were leaked out of gas industry conferences and things that they didn't want out in the public. And so what the film does is it takes a look at the long history of smear and disinformation campaigns, starting with big tobacco. Everybody knows the story, it's very well known. The tobacco industry for decades denied the fact that they themselves knew that tobacco was addictive and nicotine was addictive and that tobacco caused very, very serious health problems. They knew this and they had a problem which they couldn't really solve. There was no way to make a safe or healthy cigarette. So they embarked on a campaign of spreading misinformation throughout the public, challenging the science that existed, fostering phony science. A lot of this stuff is in the book Merchants of Doubt. There's another book called Doubt is Our Product, where they hired a PR firm called Hill & Knowlton. And Hill & Knowlton spent tons and tons of money fostering other theories of how lung cancer was created, all sorts of things that would cast doubt on the fact that cigarettes were unhealthy. Now, the American Natural Gas Alliance hired that same PR firm in 2009 to challenge a lot of the information that was coming out about natural gas contaminating water supplies. All across the country, as I have traveled to 200 cities in the U.S. and all across the world, everywhere the gas industry goes, they have contaminated water in the ground, whether that's water that can be lit on fire or water with chemicals in it. or water that's been fouled in one way or another. And so this is because of the film Gasland that shot, you know, of Mike Markham and other people in the film lighting their water on fire right out of the tap has gone viral. I mean, the film has been seen by probably 40 million people across the world. You know, they were out to counter that, and they developed a misinformation campaign, attacked the film, attacked me, attacked the people in it, and came up with all sorts of weird, sort of bogus, fake scientific statements to challenge what I was saying. And the film opens with Tom Ridge, the former governor of Pennsylvania and the first head of the Department of Homeland Security, on the Stephen Colbert Show. Stephen Colbert shows him the clips of the people lighting their water on fire. And Tom Ridge comes out and says, with a straight face, and I'm speaking as a governor, you know, that this is all naturally occurring methane. This has nothing to do with gas drilling.
And he sounds pretty well versed in lobbying speak already. He says not a single proven instance
right.
of contamination. So that's kind of that's parsing. So we can't prove it. So let's just have a debate.
Well, this is their mantra. They like to say this proven instance and all that. Of course, it's completely untrue. This is based on absolutely going out and uttering bald-faced lies. That is the strategy. Because, see, this is what happened. I couldn't believe the gas industry was attacking the film when they first started doing it. I thought, oh, my God, this is insane. They are just going to cause an enormous amount of attention to go onto the movie. I just was like, you know, they did things like sending letters to the Oscars, asking that the film be disqualified from the Oscars. I mean, outrageous, crazy stuff, like saying that, yes, these people could light their water on fire, and it was like that before we got here. I mean, you know, I felt like this was absurd. And, you know, so I was totally surprised that they were doing this until I realized that this is part of the strategy, that it's not about saying something that makes sense or is rational. It's just about creating doubt in the media. And if the media is not informed about this sort of intricate scientific subject, which a lot of people are not to their fault, but they're just not, then all of a sudden, one side that's totally lying and another side, which is based in investigative journalism and science and reporting and a history of research, are pitted up against each other.
There's a woman in the film around midway through who says, quote, "So long as there's a debate, then there's an argument for staving off regulation." Even though it might seem preposterous when you first get that initial campaign in the Oscars or whatever, they have enough money and enough patience to try to win the war. They've won in their eyes if they can just create doubt in enough ill-informed people.
Absolutely. And what's startling is that this kind of campaign, it really does shake the foundations of things that are really legitimate science. I mean, for decades, the tobacco industry, I mean, you'd think that it was pretty obvious for people to be like, oh yeah, you're smoking in this kind of smoke, and that can't possibly be really good for you, you know? And yet at the same time, that misinformation campaign worked extremely well, and it staved off regulation, and it staved off the sort of anti-smoking culture that we're in now for decades. And the same thing happened with climate change. You had a legitimate science coming forward saying humans are causing climate change, 95% of the scientific community validating that. And then this 5%, which are actually people who work for the oil and gas industry, saying, oh, no, no, this is all just naturally occurring atmospheric changes and nothing to worry about. We don't have to change our lifestyles at all. You know, so you think the thing is that kind of debate issue can really last for a very, very long time. And what we're talking about here is, just like the gas, just like the tobacco industry had all of these memos in their drawers that showed what they were saying was false, the gas industry had a similar kind of track record in terms of investigating their own work. And what these scientific memos show is that these well casings, the cement casing that goes around the side of the well, which is the part of it that's supposed to protect the groundwater, you drill through the aquifer. And then you fill that hole around the sides of it with cement so gas doesn't and oil and other contaminants don't leak up the sides. That cement is an inch thick, and it breaks down with it's extraordinarily fallible. In other words, when you drill, there's a rate of failure over time of that cement, which means that when that cement breaks down and cracks, you no longer have a seal, and all these things can migrate into aquifers. The rates are alarming. Schlumberger, the number one fracking company in the world, said 6% of these cement fails immediately upon drilling. So if you drill 100 wells, 6 of them immediately will have a casing failure problem. That is a problem where gas can migrate into an aquifer. Over a 30-year period, okay, 50% fail. 50% fail. And the industry has admitted to a huge rate of leakage worldwide. 20% of all oil and gas wells around the world at this moment are leaking. It's absolutely alarming. And when you look at that and you realize that in the film Gassing, traveling from place to place to place to place to place to place to place, everyone has the same story. We can light our water on fire. We've got problems with our water. You wonder, how is this happening? The rate of failure must be astronomical. Well, as it turns out, the gas industry knows all about it. No shop, tell the big chief want some.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with director Josh Fox. In the climate change quote-unquote debate, the talking point has kind of evolved into, yes, climate change exists, but we just don't know if it's man-made, or we really can't necessarily pinpoint it on inordinate amount of fossil fuels we've been burning over the last century. So let's go through some of the talking points from the industry. They point to an EPA study that says that, quote, the reduction in emissions from increased natural gas use strongly outweighs the detrimental effects of increased methane emissions. First, is that true? And is your biggest fear water contamination, or is that just incorrect?
What the gas industry is actually doing is countering a scientific report that came out of Cornell, a peer-reviewed scientific report that was also backed up by NOAA, that showed that fracking actually vents off enormous amounts of methane into the atmosphere. They have a huge leakage rate, not only under the ground, but above ground. So their pipes leak. I mean, gas is a gas. It's not easy to contain. It's lighter than air. It leaks through seals. It leaks out of compressor stations. It leaks out of pipelines. It leaks, and it is vented off on the wells themselves for the first several weeks, or several days to several weeks, while the wells are being completed.
Yeah, just try keeping a child's balloon inflated for a few weeks.
Exactly. You know, gases under pressure like to squirm out, but that's obvious. What that means, though, is that methane is many, many times more potent than carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere as a greenhouse gas. So it's that much greater of a problem for global climate change and global warming. So when you actually vented off huge amounts of methane, it displaces the benefit that you might get from burning gas over burning coal. And the gas industry loves, so it's been shown that frack gas and coal generation are on a par in terms of how bad they are for the atmosphere. Now, the gas industry loves to compete against coal because everybody hates coal. And coal is very, very nasty and polluting in all aspects, both burning and mining and mountaintop removal. And certainly we're not advocating coal. But the gas industry loves to pit itself against coal and say, look, we're better than coal. We're cleaner burning than coal. Well, as it turns out, in terms of emissions for climate change, that's not true. It's also, I would say, questionable that it's in those areas. It creates ground level ozone. It creates hazardous air pollutants in the drilling areas themselves. So you're just moving a pollution source from where you're burning coal, for example, in a power plant to where you're drilling for gas in the field. And you're not getting any appreciable benefit in terms of climate change. But
so it's almost like the tobacco industry saying, well, we have these filtered cigarettes that are better than the unfiltered cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I think, a pretty good analogy. The The main issue here, though, is that you're asking the wrong question when you're comparing gas to coal. If the question is, what's better than coal, and then want to come back and the answer is gas, well, first of all, it's not true. But it's also the wrong question. The better question is, what's better than fossil fuels? What's the alternative to fossil fuels? And we have alternatives to fossil fuels. We have wind, we have solar, we have geothermal, we have tidal power, we have hydroelectric. All of these things combined. And this was shown in a front page article on Scientific American by Stanford professor Mark Jacobson and many, many other people backing him up. But this is a great one for listeners to go and find because it's so easy. Just put in Mark Jacobson, Plan for Renewable Energy, Scientific American, and you'll read it. That forecasts how we can move away from fossil fuels, generate all the power we need out of renewable energy in a very short time period. I think it's by 2030. So within our lifetimes, Mark Jacobson has laid that out. Because as it turns out, you know, the sun shines during the day, but the wind blows harder at night. So you can set this situation up where you're actually, when the sun goes down, you're switching over to the wind power, and you're allowing your grid to be powered on the wind and the sun, and it's brilliant and it's very simple. Most really super world changing brilliant things are quite simple, and this is one thing that is astoundingly simple. It's like, well, the wind blows harder at night and the sun shines better during the day. Let's power things that way, and we know that we can power everything that we need from that. From electricity generation to home heating to transportation, if we're talking about changing over to electric cars. Tesla and the Nissan Leaf and these other cars that are electric cars that are coming out, they're really, really advancing in technology, and they're becoming more and more affordable and more available over the next 5-10 years.
It's just a question of making that grid that powers those batteries for those electric vehicles cleaner and greener.
Well, it's a question of where you're getting the power, right? How you're generating it. But it's also a question of political will. You know, I always say you've got to spend 5% of your time changing your light bulb and 95% of your time changing your politician. Because this is about entrenched interests in Washington and in state capitals and in governments around the world that are continuing to keep us addicted to fossil fuels. I mean, you know, look, it's really hard to quit smoking. Trust me. I know. It's really hard to quit our addiction to fossil fuels. Both things are very hard, but both things are necessary if you want to continue to live.
Are you against all fracking, or do you think there is safe fracking possible in areas that don't have any populations nearby?
Well, there's no way to frack safely. There's been an argument, right, which that land that doesn't have people on it or something is frackable, and that's okay. I don't think that's true. So I worry about the idea that safe fracking can be going somewhere else. So if we ban it in New York, which is certainly the objective, will that mean that Pennsylvania gets fracked more? Well, the answer has to be, you know, no, that means that we redouble our efforts. We're emboldened by a victory and move into Pennsylvania, because what we need desperately right now is a victory in New York. We want people to go watch The Sky is Pink and figure out why. Call Governor Cuomo. There's a website, New Yorkers Against Fracking. It's nyagainstfracking.org. nyagainstfracking.org. We can get information about how to weigh in with Governor Cuomo. Because look, you've got areas in South Africa, whole huge open spaces in South Africa right now that are waiting on cues to see what's going to happen in New York. You've got areas all in Australia waiting to find out what's going to happen in New York. You've got places throughout the world that are looking at New York and going, what's going to happen there? They have a big shale play there. Are they going to go ahead with this, or are they going to ban it? It's been banned in France. It was banned in Bulgaria. It was banned in Vermont. New Jersey just banned fracking wastewater. So there's a lot of progress. And I think New York is extremely important in this movement right now, in this worldwide effort.
It's waking up. I couldn't sleep for dreaming. My weary soul is finally home. I had the strangest feeling. This is the dawn, the break of day, after the midnight parting. These ringing ears have waited years to hear the bells of Harlem.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with director Josh Fox. He's well known for his movie Gasland. People can go to gaslandthemovie.com to check it out. His latest film is a short video, which is free on the net. It's called The Sky is Pink. Let's get into the details of New York a little bit more. When is a decision imminent? And maybe backtrack a little bit and talk about the quote-unquote compromise that Governor Cuomo reached in terms of only allowing fracking in five counties.
Well, the situation in New York is that for the last several years, they have been doing what is called a generic environmental impact statement, an environmental impact study that's being, an examination of how to create regulations for gas drilling in New York. There was a comment period after the first draft came out, and the draft looked like it had been written by the gas industry. These are the environmental rules for how to drill in New York, and it was clear that it had been written by the gas industry. There were 14,000 comments on that draft from New Yorkers. The DEC then had to look at those, incorporate them, and change it. They did that. It took them, I think it was a year and a half, to look at 14,000 comments. And then they turned around and put out a second draft. And the second draft got 68,000 public comments. That broke all records for public comments on an environmental impact statement. 68,000. The previous record before this shale fracking was 1,000. Okay, this is by far and away the most important environmental issue that's ever hit New York. So those comments came in, but now Cuomo and the DEC have signaled through the New York Times that they want to open up these five counties along the southern tier, which is a huge area, and one of them borders the Delaware River, the part of the watershed system for 16 million people, both New York, Philadelphia, southern New Jersey. They want to open that area up for drilling. Now, they floated this. It was like a trial balloon in the New York Times, and there's been a huge backlash. 100 different environmental organizations across New York State and national organizations as well have condemned the plan. There's the new piece, The Sky is Pink. There is an effort at New York Against Fracking, nyagainstfracking.org. And the time is on, because what can happen is the DEC can basically say, here's our final draft, and Cuomo can sign off on it, and 10 days later, they start permitting throughout that area in New York. And you know, there is no safe way to do fracking. There's no safe way to do fracking. There's no way to deal with this well leakage issue. So they have not been able to solve that in regulations. Regulations are permission. That's what they are. They're permission to drill. The second part of it is they have no plan for wastewater at all. They have no health impact assessment. That has not happened either. There are fatal flaws in the document, no matter how it's written. And at the same time, it's also very confusing because they're saying drill outside of the New York City watershed. Well, that's separate protections for two different kinds of people in New York. That may be unequal protection under the law. That may be totally illegal. So it may be when they go forward with this plan, that means they have to open up all of them.
One of the things that you discuss in Gasland, but isn't discussed in The Sky is Pink, is the fracking chemical debate in Congress. Well, first, why don't you give us an overview of this quote-unquote secret recipe that the industry is claiming?
Fracking is a carcinogen-dependent process. It uses enormous amounts of chemicals as they're pumped down through these well bores. You use 2 to 9 million gallons of water per frack. That is infused with various chemicals throughout the process. There's gelants, there's cross-linkers, there's surfactants, there's biocides. All these things are very harmful. And that is put into that water and used at various stages during the fracking. Some of those chemicals have appeared in water supplies after fracking has occurred, and a lot of those chemicals are proprietary. Trade secrets, like the special sauce for Big Mac, or the secret formula for Coca-Cola, they are not going to tell you what's in those chemicals. But there has been substantial research in the field pioneered by Theo Kolborn. And you can look up the chemicals at her website, which is TEDx.org, the Endocrine Disruption Exchange.org, TEDx.org. And they've revealed a lot of what those proprietary chemicals are. But what's happened in the United States is there's something called the Halliburton loophole, which is an exemption to the Safe Drinking Water Act. The gas industry fought very hard, and they had just Dick Cheney on their side, to get an exemption to our Safe Drinking Water Act, which is the act that monitors and controls injection of toxins underground. So they're exempt from reporting requirements from the Safe Drinking Water Act. They do not have to report those chemicals. Those chemicals can remain secret. And it's one of the things that we are trying to change.
When, like, Representative Darrell Issa says, the president, I'm sure he drinks Coke, and I'm sure he'd like that secret recipe too, but that's not his right.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he said that. He said, I think the president very much sent a not-so-veiled threat when he said, first of all, he was going to order these companies to disclose what they're putting 20,000 feet under the earth. And I'm sure he drinks Diet Coke. I'm sure he'd like that secret recipe too, but it's not his right. But when Darrell Issa says something about a trade secret in its very essence means that it's important for that business to stay competitive, to have that secret stay secret. But it's not a competition issue, though, is it?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The public's rights in this case, to me, are more important than the private sector's own ability to shield their product. If you're injecting your product into the water supply, which is what they're doing, I think that the public sector's rights are, in this case, far more important than that chemical secrecy. This is, to me, just another way that the gas industry is changing the subject. They don't want to admit that they're injecting harmful chemicals into the groundwater. They don't want to tell people what they are because it's scary. Because folks would get upset and say, you can't inject that into the groundwater. That's the real issue. I don't think it has to do with trade secrets. If you're going to inject chemicals into the ground, the law is the Safe Drinking Water Act, which they're exempt from. And it's good to hear that Obama is saying he wants that exemption to end. Then you have to say what you're doing. You have to list the ingredients on your product. You have to list it on the back of Coca-Cola. And that stuff has to be safe. I mean, if
people were lighting Coke on fire.
Yeah, exactly. If benzene was in Coca-Cola, if glutaraldehyde was in Coca-Cola, if formaldehyde was in Coca-Cola, if some of these compounds, which we know are incredibly contaminating and contaminate in very, very, very small amounts, were in Coca-Cola, I don't think Coca-Cola would be on the market.
Director Josh Fox, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. The future to the past,
find what we'll endure. You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Lafayette Leak, Dave Rawlings, and the Wild Magnolias.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Farm Fresh to You Organic Produce Delivery Service, connecting people to farms and leading the progressive change in America's food system. To learn more, go to farmfreshtoyou.com. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.